This is text for making audiobook in MP3 of Incidents in My Life by Daniel Dunglass Holm, 1833-1886. Published car, 1863. Chapter 1. Early Life, I Become a Medium. I was born near Edinburgh, in March, 1833. When I was about a year old, I was adopted by an aunt, and I accompanied her and her husband to America when I was about 9 years old. I was very delicate as a child, and of a highly nervous temperament, so much so that it was not thought that I could be reared. I cannot remember when I first became subject to the curious phenomena which have now for so long attended me. But my aunt and others have told me that when I was a baby my cradle was frequently rocked, as if some kind guardian spirit was tending me in my slumbers. My aunt has also told me that when I was about 4 years old, I had a vision of the circumstances attending the passing from earth of a little cousin, I being at Portobello, near Edinburgh, and she at Linlithgow, all which proved to be entirely correct, though I had mentioned persons as being present about her, who it is thought could not have been there, and had noticed the absence of her father on the water, at a time when it was thought that he must be with her at home. When about 13 years of age, the first vision which I distinctly remember occurred. I was, from my delicate health, unable to join the sports of other boys of my own age. I had, a few months before the vision which I am about to relate, made the acquaintance of a boy 2 or 3 years my senior, and somewhat similar to myself both in character and organization. We were in the habit of reading the Bible together, and upon one occasion, in the month of April, as we had been reading it in the woods, and we were both of us silently contemplating the beauties of the springing vegetation, he turned to me and said, "Oh, I have been reading such a strange story." And he told me a ghost story connected with the family of Lord Dash, and which I have since found to be well authenticated. A portrait of the lady to whom it occurred still exists in the family, and is known as the Lady with the Black Ribbon. The present lord, who is of the same family, has told me that he was born in the chamber where the spirit appeared. My friend Edwin asked me if I thought the story could be true, and I said I did not know, but that I had heard strange things of that kind. We then agreed that whichever one of us should first be called from earth, would, if God permitted it, appear to the other the third day afterwards. We read another chapter of the Bible together, and we prayed that so it might be to us. About a month from this time, I went with my family to reside at Roy in the state of New York, a distance from Norwich, where Edwin lived, of nearly 300 miles. I had been to spend the evening at the latter end of June with some friends, and nothing had occurred during the evening to excite my imagination, or to agitate my mind. On the contrary, I was in a calm state. The family had retired to rest, and I at once went to my room, which was so completely filled with the moonlight as to render a candle unnecessary. After saying my prayers, I was seated on the bed, and about to draw the sheet over me, when a sudden darkness seemed to pervade the room. This surprised me, inasmuch as I had not seen a cloud in the sky, and on looking up I saw the moon still shining, but it was on the other side of the darkness, which still grew more dense, until through the darkness there seemed to be a gleam of light, which I cannot describe, but it was similar to those which I and many others have since seen when the room has been illuminated by spiritual presence. This light increased, and my attention was drawn to the foot of my bed, where stood my friend Edwin. He appeared as in a cloud of brightness, illuminating his face with a distinctness more than mortal. His features were unchanged except in brightness, and the only difference I saw was that his hair was long, and that it fell in wavy ringlets upon his shoulders. He looked on me with a smile of ineffable sweetness, then slowly raising the right arm, he pointed upward, and making with it 3 circles in the air, the hand began slowly to disappear, and then the arm, and finally the whole body melted away. The natural light of the room was then again apparent. I was speechless and could not move, though I retained all my reasoning faculties. As soon as the power of movement was restored, I rang the bell, and the family, thinking I was in, came to my room, when my first words were, "I have seen Edwin Dash. He died 3 days ago at this very hour." This was found to be perfectly correct by a letter which came a few days afterwards, announcing that after only a few hours' illness, he had died of malignant dysentery. My mother was a seer throughout her life. She passed from Earth in the year 1850, at the age of 42. She had what is known in Scotland as the second sight, and in many instances she saw things which were afterwards found to have occurred at a distance, just as she had described them. She also foresaw many events which occurred in the family, and foretold the passing away of relatives, and lastly, she foretold her own 4 months previously. I was then 17, and was residing at Norwich, Connecticut, and my mother was living at Waterford, near New London, 12 miles distant. One day I suddenly felt a strong impulse that she wished to see me, and I walked all the way in consequence of this impression. When I got home, I felt an impression that she had something particular to communicate to me that evening. When we were alone, I turned to her and said, "What have you to say to me, mother?" She looked at me with intense surprise, and then a smile came over her face, and she said, "Well, dear, it was only to tell you that 4 months from this time I shall leave you." I asked incredulously how she knew, and she said, "Your little sister, Mary, came to me in a vision, holding 4 lilies in her hand, and allowing them to slip through her fingers one after the other, till the last one had fallen," she said, "and then you will come to me." I asked her whether the 4 lilies signified years, months, weeks, or days, and she told me I months. I had been quite impressed by this narration, when my mother added, "And I shall be quite alone when I die, and there will not be a relative near to close my eyes." This appeared to me to be so improbable, not to say impossible, inasmuch as the family was a large one, and we had many relatives, that I said to her, "Oh, mother, I am so delighted you have told me this, because it shows that it must be a false vision." She shook her head. Mary was a little sister who had been taken from Earth under most trying circumstances about 4 years previously. My mother was out for a walk, leaving the child at home, and on returning, having to cross a running stream, and whilst she was on the bridge over it, she saw what appeared to be some loose clothes floating on the water, and hastening to the side to see what it was, she drew out the body of her child. The apparently impossible prophecy was literally fulfilled, for by a strange complication of circumstances, my mother was taken ill amongst strangers, and a telegram which they sent on the last day of the 4th month, announcing her serious illness, only reached us about 11:30 in the morning. Being myself confined to bed by illness at the house of my aunt, and she being unable to leave me, the telegram was sent on to my father. That same evening, about twilight, being alone in my room, I heard a voice at the head of my bed which I did not recognize, saying to me solemnly, "Dan, 12 o'clock. I turned my head, and between the window and my bed I saw what appeared to be the bust of my mother. I saw her lips move, and again I heard the same words, "Dan, 12 o'clock. A third time she repeated this, and disappeared from my sight. I was extremely agitated, and rang the bell hastily to summon my aunt, and when she came I said, "Auntie, mother died today at 12 o'clock, because I have seen her, and she told me." She said, "Nonsense, child, you are ill, and this is the effect of a fevered brain." It was, however, too true, as my father found on going to see her, that she had died at 12 o'clock, and without the presence of a relative to close her eyes. My mother has also told me that her great-uncle, Colin Urquhart, and her uncle, Mr. Mackenzie, were also seers, and gifted with a second sight. A few months after my mother had passed from Earth, one night on going to bed, I heard 3 loud blows on the head of my bed, as if struck by a hammer. My first impression was that someone must be concealed in my room to frighten me. They were again repeated, and as they were sounding in my ears, the impression first came on me that they were something not of earth. After a few moments' silence they were again heard, and although I spent a sleepless night, I no longer felt or heard any repetition of them. My aunt was a member of the Kirk of Scotland, and I had some 2 years previously, to her great disapprobation, become a member of the Wesleyan body, but her opposition was so violent that I left them to join the Congregationalists. On going down to breakfast in the morning, she noticed my wan appearance, and taunted me with having been agitated by some of my prayer meetings. I was about to seat myself at the breakfast table, when our cars were assailed by a perfect shower of wraps all over the table. I stopped almost terror-stricken to hear again such sounds coming with no visible cause. But I was soon brought back to the realities of life by my aunt's exclamation of horror, "So you've brought the devil to my house, have you?" I ought here to state that there had then been some talk of the so-called Rochester knockings through the Fox family, but apart from casually hearing of them, I had paid no attention to them. I did not know even what they meant. My aunt, on the contrary, had heard of them from some of the neighbors, and considered them as some of the works of the evil one. In her uncontrollable anger, she seized a chair and threw it at me. Knowing how entirely innocent I was of the cause of her unfortunate anger, my feelings were deeply injured by her violence, and at the same time I was strengthened in a determination to find out what might be the cause of these disturbances of our morning meal. There were in the village three ministers, one a Congregationalist, one a Baptist, and the other a Wesleyan. In the afternoon, my aunt, her anger at me having for the moment caused her to lose sight of her prejudices against these rival persuasions, sent for them to consult with her, and to pray for me, that I might be freed from such visitations. The Baptist minister, Mr. Mussey, came first, and after having questioned me as to how I had brought these things about me, and finding that I could give him no explanation, he desired that we might pray together for a cessation of them. Whilst we were thus engaged in prayer, at every mention of the holy names of God and Jesus, there came gentle taps on his chair, and in different parts of the room, whilst at every expression of a wish for God's loving mercy to be shown to us and our fellow creatures, there were loud rappings, as if joining in our heartfelt prayers. I was so struck, and so impressed by this, that there and then, upon my knees, I resolved to place myself entirely at God's disposal, and to follow the leadings of that which I then felt must be only good and true, else why should it have signified its joy at those special portions of the prayer? This was, in fact, the turning point of my life, and I have never had cause to regret for one instant my determination, though I have been called on for many years to suffer deeply in carrying it out. My honor has been called in question, my pride wounded, my worldly prospects blighted, and I was turned out of house and home at the age of 18, though still a child in body from the delicacy of my health, without a friend, and with three younger children dependent on me for support. Of the other two clergymen, the Congregationalist would not enter into the subject, saying that he saw no reason why a pure-minded boy should be persecuted for what he was not responsible to prevent or cause, and the Methodist was so unkind, attributing it to the devil, and treating me as a lost sheep, that I derived no comfort from him. Notwithstanding the visits of these ministers, and the continued horror of my aunt, which only increased as each manifestation was developed, the rappings continued, and the furniture now began to be moved about without any visible agency. The first time this occurred I was in my room, and was brushing my hair before the looking glass. In the glass I saw a chair that stood between me and the door, moving slowly towards me. My first feeling was one of intense fear, and I looked round to see if there were no escape, but there was the chair between me and the door, and still it moved towards me as I continued looking at it, when within about a foot of me it stopped, whereupon I jumped past it, rushed downstairs, seized my hat in the ball, and went out to ponder on this wonderful phenomenon. After this, when sitting quietly in the room with my aunt and uncle, the table, and sometimes the chairs, and other furniture, were moved about by themselves in a singular way, to the great disgust and surprise of my relations. Upon one occasion, as the table was being thus moved about of itself, my aunt brought the family Bible, and placing it on the table, said, "There, that will soon drive the devils away," but to her astonishment the table only moved in a more lively manner, as if pleased to bear such a burden. Seeing this, she was greatly incensed, and determining to stop it, she angrily placed her whole weight on the table, and was actually lifted up with it bodily from the floor. My only consolation at this time was from another aunt, a widow, who lived near, whose heartfelt sympathy did much to cheer and console me. At her house, when I visited her, the same phenomena occurred, and we the first began to ask questions, to which we received intelligent replies. The spirit of my mother at her house in this way communicated the following: Daniel, fear not, my child, God is with you, and who shall be against you? Seek to do good, be truthful and truth-loving, and you will prosper, my child. Yours is a glorious mission. You will convince the infidel, cure the sick, and console the weeping. This was the first communication I ever received, and it came within the first week of these visitations. I remember it well. I have never forgotten it, and can never forget it while reason and life shall last. I have reason to remember it too, because this was the last week I passed in the house of the aunt who had adopted me, for she was unable to bear the continuance of the phenomena, which so distressed her religious convictions, and she felt it a duty that I should leave her house, and which I did. One of the singular manifestations which occurred during this first week, was in connection with Mrs. Force, a neighbor. I should mention that by this time the neighbors had heard of what was occurring in my presence, and were besieging the house in a way that did not tend to soothe the religious susceptibilities of my aunt. Being one evening at the house of Mrs. Force, the raps were heard, and the alphabet was used in the way that has now become familiar to many. The name of her mother was in this way given, announcing her presence, and words were spelt out, reproaching her with having so long forgotten her half-sister, who had been married some 30 years previously to a farmer, who removed to the far west, and had not since been heard of. Her mother went on by means of the alphabet and the raps, to state the name of the town where this daughter by a former husband lived, the number of their children, and each of their names. Mrs. Force wrote to the address thus given, and received a letter in reply confirming every particular, and the family was in this way again brought together, and mutual sympathies were interchanged. On visiting Mrs. Force the following year, I found that she had had one of her newly found nephews to visit her the previous autumn. I go into these particulars not to revive or to cause painful recollections to anyone, but merely to show the history of my mediumship, and the mysterious working of Providence in thus throwing me before the public. Had it not been for this chain of circumstances, these truths might have remained unknown so widely as they now are. Although the manifestations had only lasted a week, they had become known not only to the town, but through the newspapers they were becoming public all over the New England states, and when I left my aunt's house, I went to a neighboring town, Wymantic, and was received at the house of a friend there. Whilst I was with him, these phenomena were repeated, and those present investigated them in the most determined manner. I find the following account of what occurred stated in a newspaper of March, 1851. At request, the table was moved repeatedly, and in any direction that we asked to have it. All the circle, the medium included, had their hands flat upon the table, and we looked several times under the table while it was in the most rapid motion, and saw that no legs or feet had any agency in the movement. The table was a large and heavy one, without casters, and could not be moved by Mr. Hayden in the same manner by all his exertion with his hands laid open upon the table. At one time, too, the table was moved without the medium's hands or feet touching it at all. At our request, the table was turned over into our lap. The table was moved, too, while Mr. Hayden was trying to hold it still. Mr. Hayden took hold of the top at first, and failing that way, he grasped the leg, and held with all his strength. The table did not move so freely as before. It would move a little way from Mr. Hayden, and then the invisible power would suddenly relax its effort, when it would spring back with the exertion of Mr. Hayden. I was then 18 years old, and on seeing this article which made me so public, I shrank from so prominent a position with all the earnestness of a sensitive mind, but I now found myself finally, embarked without any volition of my own, and indeed, greatly against my will, upon the tempestuous sea of a public life. From this time I never had a moment to call my own. In sickness or in health, by day or night, my privacy was intruded on by all comers, some from curiosity, and some from higher motives. Men and women of all classes, and all countries, physicians and men of science, ministers of all persuasions, and men of literature and of art, All have eagerly sought for the proofs of this great and absorbing question of the possibility of spiritual causes acting on this world of nature. For myself, I have no apology to offer for the occurrence of these unwanted manifestations in my own case. As will have been seen, they came to me quite unsought, and with all the unpleasant and painful accompaniments which I have described. I have not, and never had the slightest power over them, either to bring them on, or to send them away, or to increase, or to lessen them. What may be the peculiar laws under which they have become developed in my person, I know no more than others. Whilst they occur, I am not conscious of the mode by which they are produced, nor of the sort of manifestation that is about to occur. Any peculiar sensations that I may experience during certain of the manifestations, I will describe as far as I can, while mentioning the visions or external phenomena. Beyond being of a highly nervous organization, there is nothing peculiar about me that I am aware of, but I continue to have delicate health, and I firmly believe that had it not been for these phenomena, I could not have lived till now. In this belief, many physicians of high standing have given their testimony to bear me out. Frequently during the most severe visitations of illness, my pains have been suddenly soothed in a mysterious way, and many times when it would have been impossible to have moved me in bed, for fear of increased hemorrhage from the lungs, my head has been slowly lifted, and my pillow has been turned by unseen hands. This has been repeatedly witnessed by many persons. Especially, I would say, that I do not on this account or on any other, consider myself morally superior to others, nor should any one believe that these phenomena come to me, or to others, on account of moral or immoral qualities. On the contrary, with the great blessings which have been showered on me, and the ineffable proofs which I have received of God's providence and goodness to me, I feel myself only worse than others that I should have made so little progress in the path of good. I have to thank God for many kind friends, not less than for many bitter enemies, since they keep my mind in an equilibrium, and do not suffer me to feel any pride at what is no doubt but an accident, so to speak, of my organization. These extraordinary occurrences have, with some exceptions, continued with me ever since the time I have stated as their commencement, and they have extended their range, to my astonishment not less than to that of others, in the most striking manner. They have proved to me and to thousands of careful and able investigators, the existence of spiritual forces which are calculated to revolutionize the current ignorance both of philosophy and of theology, as men have made them. The exceptions to which I refer have been of periods during which the power has left me entirely, for instance, from the 10th of February, 1856, to the 10th of February, 1857, during which time I had no external token of spirit power, though I on several occasions had visions, one of which was my seeing the manner in which a brother passed from earth. He was frozen in the polar seas whilst out bear shooting with the captain and officers of his ship. Falling into a fissure of the ice, he was not found till the following morning. I saw all this in a vision at the very time of its occurrence, and informed my family of it 5 months before the confirmation of the intelligence arrived. On several other occasions, the power has ceased for shorter periods, and generally I have been told beforehand, both of the times of its cessation and return. I could never detect any physical cause for such cessation, nor any difference in my general feelings or health, although the reason given for the withdrawal has commonly been on the ground of health. Upon several occasions, however, the reason given was that it was withdrawn from me as a reproof for having done that which I knew to be wrong. Chapter 2. Before the world. I remained in Wymantic but a short time, and then I went to Lebanon, a few miles off. There I was received in the family of an old resident. After I had been with them a few days, I saw a spirit who called himself Uncle Tilden. I asked a lady, a member of the family, if she recognized the name. But before she had time to make answer, the spirit made signs to me that he did not wish the lady to tell the name, and that he would come on another occasion to me, when he could have more perfect control. In the course of a few days he came whilst I was entranced, and signified that certain papers which his family had been seeking for years, and for which they had given up the search as hopeless, would be found in a house which he described as situate near Cleveland, Ohio. They were the title deeds of some land which had become valuable for building purposes, and out of which a lady was entitled to her thirds, but which by reason of the loss of the deeds, were withheld from her, and she was in consequence living in very straitened circumstances. He described to them minutely through me the part of the garret, and the form of the box in which they would be found. Her son was written to with these particulars, the search was made, and the deeds were found as described. The second week of my stay at Lebanon, I had been to pass a day or two with an English family residing about 3 miles off. One afternoon, I suddenly became unconscious or entranced, and on awaking, the lady of the house told me that I had been speaking with some spirit, who directed me to proceed at once to the house of a Mr. B. I had seen two brothers of this name one evening a week previously, and no interchange of visits had been made or proposed, and I felt that it would be most awkward for me to call on them, saying only that I had been sent by my unseen friends. The distance was also 6 miles from where I then was, and 3 miles of the journey I would have to walk. I knew that when I returned to my friends at Lebanon, I could have their conveyance, but still I had not any inclination to pay the visit. As soon as this was fully decided in my mind, I was again made unconscious, and on recovering, I was told that I had received strict injunctions to leave at once, though no reason was assigned why I should go. I then felt, however, that the order ought to be obeyed, and I went to my room for the purpose of dressing for the journey. While there, my reasoning faculties again assumed the ascendancy, and I thought that if I were thus sent, I ought at least to know for what purpose. However, I soon again felt myself impelled by a force far superior to mine, and which to have even attempted to resist would have been folly. On leaving the house, all this left me, and I walked the 3 miles to Lebanon, wondering what could be the cause of this singular errand. On arriving, I stated to my friends all that had occurred, and they also thought it would have been quite as well to have ascertained why I had been sent. Finding that they agreed with me in this, I now again fully determined to proceed no farther, but I was quickly made insensible, and on awaking I found that orders had been given by the family to have a horse saddled, and that I was admonished in a gentle but firm manner, for my want of faith and overweening curiosity, whereas I ought, I was told, to have followed as a child would its teacher, or an indulgent parent. Before I left the house to complete the journey, the sun had set, and now rain-laden clouds were fast overshadowing the sky. The road was lonely, and for the month of April the weather was uncommonly chill. I had agreed in my mind that my guardians had been teaching me a useful lesson, and I resolved that thenceforward I would not seek to know their purposes. In this frame of mind I reached what I knew from description must be the house of Mr. B., and as I was about to dismount, the first raindrop fell on my ungloved hand, and with the contact came the most vivid impression that Mr. B.'s mother was dangerously ill. I rang the bell, and Mr. B., having seen me, came himself to open the door. As he did so, I said, "Your mother is ill, and I have been sent to say what will relieve her." His look of intense surprise baffles description, as he said, "How on earth could you have known of her illness, as it is only an hour since she fell ill, and we have sent in another direction for a medical man, but I fear he will not arrive in time to save my poor mother, as she seems sinking so rapidly." On entering the house, I stood waiting to see what impression I might receive. Whilst I was standing, I was thrown suddenly into a trance, and I was told by Mr. B., that in that state I led the way to Big Mother's bedroom, and that after making a few passes over her with my hands, the acute pains left her, and that in a few minutes' time she was in a quiet sleep. Whilst in the trance, I also mentioned simple remedies of herbs for immediate use, and others for continued use. I was then led by the unseen power into the sitting room, and there returned to my normal state, greatly surprised when these things were related to me. The doctor arrived in about an hour, to find Big patient quite out of danger, and on examining her, he said that from the nature and violence of the attack, it would in all probability have been fatal, had steps not been taken at once to alleviate the symptoms. A letter written a few weeks after to a friend by Mr. B., says that his mother has not had such health for 18 years past, as she now enjoys, She follows implicitly all the instructions given through Daniel, and the effect is magical.